Welcome to Tech Talk Online, sponsored by Stratford University. You can listen to Tech Talk live in the Washington, D.C. area, Saturday mornings from 9 till 10 on the following frequencies. 1500 AM, 1045 FM, 1035 FM HD2, and 1039 FM HD2. We thank you for listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
It's Groundhog Day!
And I'm Jim Russ.
Oh, yes, we're back.
No, we're still in the bunker.
Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still in coronavirus isolation.
Mm-hmm.
But as always, it was a big week in technology. Microsoft is in active negotiations with TikTok to purchase them from ByteDance. This is after Trump wants to ban their use in the U.S. And we finally have the first COVID tracing app has been released. This is the technology that was developed by Google and Apple together. They created an API to make these apps. And guess what? The first app that's been released has been released in Virginia. So Virginia is the first one to have it. I'll talk about how you can download that tracing app and exactly what it does. And this, I'm going to talk about a few things that are interesting this week. The tip of the week is how to use PDFs. Have you ever had to fill out a PDF and then you just don't want to print it and write on it? You'd rather fill in the blanks, but there's no way to do it. I'll tell you how to do it. It's a very nice trick, and it's very convenient. And I'm going to also talk about the idea of the week. There's an organization out there I think is really innovative, Black Girls Code. And they're training African-American girls to enter the tech field and teach them how to code. It's really a great initiative on the part of that nonprofit. This week we're going to feature one of the founders of the discipline of AI. He's actually the man who coined the term artificial intelligence, and he developed the Lisp programming language. Lisp programming language was used for, programming a lot of AI applications back in the day. And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes, we got an email from Jim in Baltimore.
Oh, I've been outed.
What do you know about that? Dear Doc, my wireless Apple keyboard has developed a problem. All of a sudden, several keys stopped functioning. I did not spill anything on it, and I replaced the batteries. The keys in question are close to one another on the far right side of the keyboard. What could be wrong? Signed, Hunting and Pecking in Baltimore.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, Hunting and Pecking, you're not the only one that's got a problem.
Really?
This is a common complaint about Apple keyboards. I went on the web and I went to discussion forums, and people are totally teed off with this because there'll be a group of keys that will all go out together.
Yep.
And some people have tried various fixes. They've tried software fixes. They say it could be a software problem, and then they'll upgrade their operating system and the keyboard will stop working. One person actually opened up the back of the keyboard and you could see a ribbon cable back there. They pulled the ribbon cable out of the plug, cleaned the plug, cleaned the connector itself within the ribbon cable with isopropyl alcohol. Then they blew it dry, and after it was completely dry, they plugged it back in, and they said that fixed it. So that was a bad connection with the ribbon connector there. But others think it's just a hardware problem. And here's the thing. Apple is silent on it. I went to the Apple website. They're not saying anything about it. They're just waiting for people to, replace the keyboard.
And
they're
expensive. Pay for
so,
it.
I don't have a lot of good advice, Jim. I couldn't get any. There was just a lot of controversy. And I probably the only hard recommendation was cleaning that ribbon cable. That's about the only thing that I found.
That's
we got an email from Alan in St. Louis. Dear Tech Talk, I really love my old Dell Optiplex 745 desktop computer. Now, this computer's got an 80 gig hard drive, and when I turn it on, the hard drive makes this clicking sound for about 5 to 10 seconds, and then it finally starts booting up slowly, and then eventually it will boot up. Now, sometimes the clicking sound goes on for more than 5 to 10 seconds. Now, I want to know, do you think this hard drive's going bad, and what's the best way to get files off of that that old computer? Love the podcast, Alan in St. Louis. Well, Alan, your hard drive is bad, and you're lucky that it even boots up at all. So you need to copy your files as quickly as possible. What you want to do is get a USB hard drive. That's a hard drive that, and you can get them for less than $100. Plug it into the USB port on that computer, and then turn on the computer and hope that it boots up one more time. And then you just open up your Windows Explorer file and go to one of the subdirectories of where it has the files where you want to copy all the files. Then you open up another version of Windows Explorer and then go to the then open up the hard drive, the external hard drive, which might be listed as a D drive, for instance. Open that up. And then what you're going to want to do, highlight the folder that you want to copy and simply drag it from the one Windows Explorer window to the other one. And so you're just dragging it over to the hard drive, and it'll copy all the files onto the external hard drive. And then go to the second subdirectory that you want to copy, just drag them over, and you get all your files copied off. Now, don't forget about the files that are on the desktop. You might have some files up there. After you are certain that you have all the files that from your computer, you want to go back and double check you've got good copies on the external hard drive, then you can just turn off your machine and go buy a new one. And I really don't have a good suggestion on what to do with it. I mean, you could replace the hard drive, I suppose, if you want to keep it, but it's so old you may want to get a new one. So best of luck with that, Alan. We got an email from Bob in Maryland. Dear Doc and Jim and the ethereal Mr. Big Voice.
Ethereal.
You know, Bob in Maryland just loves Mr. Big Voice.
We may have to get them together for lunch.
Yeah, today was another classic show. I have to say the lockdown editions have their own special flair. I particularly like observations from the bunker.
Becoming a fan favorite.
I Googled an article of former BBNers and I thought it had a whole list of people that would be great folks for profiles in IT. So take a look at that. I hope it's useful. As always, I love the show and never want to miss it. I'm always working on my friends to recruit more listeners. You know, we want to build that. We'd like to hit the 10 listener mark, Jim. I hope this year we can get up to 10 listeners.
Oh, you've little faith.
Oh, we have. I mean, we've documented 5 listeners, but they're all family members and relatives. Mm-hmm. But we want to get up to 10 if we can. But I'm recruiting more listeners, particularly for other physicists and mathematicians that I throw in for fun. I even try to get my friends in Canada to listen. Keep up the good work, Bob,
well,
in Maryland.
We've done our best to alienate Canadians.
Yes, we have. Well, thanks for that list of BBNers. BBN, of course, is Bolt, Baranek, and Newman. It's a technology company in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it was a pioneer in the early days of the internet. I think they had node number 1 on the internet. They made the IMP, which was the processing unit, the message processor that formed the node in the internet. So they were one of the first. They were one of the 4 nodes in the first internet that was out, and so there were a lot of technology pioneers that worked at BBN. So that's a great list. Thanks a lot. In fact, I pulled one of the people from that list for today's profile in IT. He's one of the founders of AI. We got an email from Tung in Cleveland. Dear Tech Talk, my mom's friend told her to be careful about what she puts on Facebook, because once something's posted, it stays on the internet forever. Mm-hmm. I told my mom it isn't true. Oh, my mom said that's not true, because she said as soon as she posts something and then wants to delete it, as soon as she deletes it, it's gone. So she doesn't believe me. She thinks it's she can put stuff up and then delete it and it's gone.
Oh, no.
So my question is, how can I convince Mom that the things that she posts really are, really might stay there forever? Tong in Cleveland. Well, it is true, Tong, that when your mom deletes something from her account, it is immediately deleted on her account. Now, the problem is, if she shared that posting with friends, depends on her privacy settings, or she could share that posting with anybody if she's got, doesn't have any privacy set up. Somebody could see that posting, and they could, and then they could copy it, or they could repost it to their page. Mm-hmm. And once it's been reposted or copied, you've lost complete control over it. Yep. So you can never be certain that something's going to disappear from the internet just because you've deleted it. Now, the other thing, too, is even though you might have deleted it on the Facebook account and it doesn't show, it's still on the Facebook backup servers. And they're a little bit, Facebook's a little bit mum over how long they keep that stuff. Because I think they like to keep it because it gives it more information about people. And, of course, they're in the business of selling your private information. Mm-hmm. So it still may be on the Facebook servers, even though they're not serving it up whenever people look at your Facebook page. So just be careful. And don't post anything on Facebook that you wouldn't want the world to know about.
Yep.
We got an email from Stu in Kilmarnock. Dear Tech Talk, I'd like to control my boat lift wirelessly. Sometimes I got to adjust the lift when I'm returning because the tide has changed water levels. And I hate to jump on the dock to do that. I want to just sit in my chair, in the captain's chair, and do it remotely. Is there some type of Bluetooth or Wi-Fi remote for a lift? Enjoy the show. Enjoy the podcast, Stu in Kilmarnock, Virginia. Well, Stu, I'll tell you, Wi-Fi is not an option because you're too far from your house. You get that doesn't make any sense. Bluetooth makes even less sense because you only got about 20 feet of range. So what you're gonna want to have to use one of the unlicensed radio frequency bands. And basically, it's the same band that people use to control remote control aircraft. It's RF bands. And there are a number of these units available. They all operate in the 340 megahertz band, which allows unlicensed operators if they operate at very low power. So there's a power restriction on the transmitter, but that's unlicensed and available. And if you operate in that unlicensed band with a low power transmitter, you can get a range of up to 500 feet, which is certainly good enough for controlling your lift. Now, here are a couple of the options. You got the Lift Power LP remote boat lift control. Now, that supports two motors and tilt leveling. That's if you got two motors and you want to tilt the boat so the bottom is the back of the boat's a little bit lower than the front, so the water drains out because you don't really like to make your boat into a bathtub. And so you can control that tilt with very, very easily with that motor. That's $450.
Make sure you leave the drain plug in.
Yeah, and that's $450, and it'll also support one motor or two motors. Now, there's another one that's actually pretty nice. It's the GEM GR2A double motor remote with auto stop capability. Now, I like that auto stop because that means you don't have to hold down the button. You just press it down and it will go down to a fixed position in the down, and you can preset that with some limit switches. And then when you bring it back up, you just click up and it will just go on up till it hits the limit switches, and then your boat is properly set. I sort of like that auto stop. Now, it's a little bit more expensive. That's $579. It will support actually up to four motors. I mean, that's some of these lifts that really have heavy, heavy boats. There's a motor on each of the corners. And so that would be four motors, and that's for the really big boats. And so it will hold that. And I think the auto stop capability is pretty nice. That guarantees that you can't, say, forget to turn off the lift motors, mm-hmm. and then the cables all unravel the wrong way and get all tangled up. That can happen. And it happened to me once. And I tell you, once that happens to you, it never happens again. So best of luck with that, Stu. And I hope you enjoy your wireless lift. We got an email from Susan in Alexandria. Good morning, Dr. Schertz. I just wondered what you and Jim think of the AAA testing of partially automated driving systems and what it says about the future of autonomous vehicles. I heard they had problems, and the AAA actually points out those problems. Thanks again for your informative and entertaining show, Susan in Alexandria. Well, that AAA article was pretty damning. They went through and they evaluated five cars, Cadillac, BMW, five cars, not Tesla, in this go around. And these cars could be confused by a stopped vehicle on the road,
right,
or a turned over vehicle. They were confused by that, and they would just hit them if you didn't take action. So none of them were fully autonomous. They and in some cases even the lane following algorithms didn't work too well when you had a complicated lane structure or when there was missing paint in the lane. So they were saying that AAA was recommending that automobile vendors don't put this semi-autonomous functions on their vehicles because it gives drivers a false sense of security. Then they don't pay attention. The initial ones that were released, say with Tesla, those were kind of tech savvy people, and they could play with it, and they knew that it was in beta, and that's a little bit different than putting it on your mom's Cadillac, and she can barely work the wireless key to get in the car, and then she's got this. So there are real issues. Now, I've got to tell you, of all of the autonomous vehicles vendors out there, Tesla is ahead of the pack. And what's interesting, Tesla has decided not to use laser radar, LIDAR. They just have passive cameras out there, multiple passive cameras, and they use machine learning to analyze the situations. Whereas other major manufacturers like Waymo and Uber, they're using LIDAR, and LIDAR gives you basically, range information. So if there's an object in front of you that blends in perfectly with the sky or the background, the LIDAR will see it because it's going to get a ping back at range, and they'll know exactly what the range is. So you get much more information with LIDAR, but Tesla and Elon Musk, they don't believe in it because it adds a lot of cost and complexity. Plus, LIDARs are pretty bulky. It looks like a little air conditioner sitting on the top of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really that attractive. Now, here's the, but Tesla's got a problem, and they're the leader of the pack. For instance, Tesla's, their deep learning algorithms, they depend on, They try to create scenarios, and they train the software to handle the scenario. So that's very good if the scenarios that you see are exactly what was in the training set. But if the scenarios are different, then they're not going to see it. So, for instance, in 2016, a Tesla car crashed into a tractor-trailer truck that was turning across the road because it was painted white. And the sky was white, and it blended right into the sky. There was no LIDAR. It didn't see it. It just crashed right into it. And the driver was killed because he was just reading a book. He was trusting the algorithm to work. Then there were several instances where the Tesla vehicles on autopilot crashed into parked cars. One time they crashed into a parked fire truck, or they also another time they crashed into an overturned vehicle. And in fact, I saw some footage from highway webcam that showed a Tesla just smashing right into an overturned vehicle. And the guy was, again, just reading a book, thinking that the thing could take care of it. In all cases, the neural network was seeing a scene that had not been included in the training data. And it was too different from what had been done. And that's the weakness. So Musk says, Tesla is constantly trying to deal with what he calls edge cases. These are new situations that are not in the training set. But the problem is we don't know how many edge cases there are. They're virtually limitless.
Yes.
And that's what's referred to as the long tail of problems that deep learning must solve. So there are many people who are pessimistic saying we'll never be able to handle this sufficiently, and that fully autonomous vehicles will never actually be a reality. Elon Musk says he's going to get it done in a couple of years, and he's overly optimistic. I suspect that we'll end up with autonomous driving on the highway, mm-hmm. where the highway is marked very specifically, and it's a well-controlled environment. And I think that will be done safely sooner rather than later. And I think that's also going to be used for autonomous driving of trucks. I can see us getting rid of truck drivers and simply having highways that are marked so that the trucks can drive autonomously. But I think it's going to be a good long while before we have fully autonomous operation within cities.
You'll need the truck drivers to get them to and from the highway.
Yeah. So there'll just be a parking lot, and then the truck will just pull over and park, and then somebody will come out and pick it up.
Hopefully it'll
stop. But that way you'll just have people that are just, you know, bringing the trucks in for the last mile, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the long haul across the country will just be done autonomously. I mean, they'll even probably they'll pull into gas stations and get gas autonomously. I mean, I think that is going to come sooner rather than later, because we've got the interstate highway system, which can be marked to make autonomous vehicles safe. So I think that will happen sooner rather than later. I just can't imagine driving around the city. I mean, I've got a friend out in California. He's got a Tesla, and it is a lot of fun to go out there. I mean, I was watching him. We're sitting there driving down the highway. On the highway, it's fully autonomous. You can sit there. And but he actually trusts his Tesla. So when he gets on the highway and on the way to work, he opens up his laptop and does email.
That's the problem. See, this is the problem, because you have to treat it like it's an airplane that's on autopilot. The pilot is always there on standby, ready to take over if something goes wrong. And I think civilians, for lack of a better term, are going to get out there in their car and think, okay, I'm on the highway, I can turn my brain off and take a nap or whatever and let the car do its thing. And I don't think that's the case. That's not safe. You have to be there and ready to take over in an instant if something goes wrong.
That's right. That is the problem. And that's also why AAA is recommending that there be less autonomous vehicle software put out there until these problems are resolved. Well, that was a great email, Susan. Listen, we love your emails.
We do.
We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, heard on 1500 AM, 103.5 FM HD2, 103.9 FM HD2, in Loudoun County on 104.5 FM, and now also on 107.7 FM HD2. So there you go. A lot of places where you can hear Tech Talk. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
In the next 3 years, there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs. How can you make that work for you? Stratford University offers everything you need to succeed, from certifications to bachelor's and even master's degrees in cybersecurity, to prepare you for a rewarding career in today's most lucrative and sought-after field, cybersecurity. Stratford has seasoned IT faculty, well-equipped labs, and real-life scenarios to help you achieve practical solutions to today's newest challenges. And Stratford makes a cybersecurity career a reality with accelerated classes, year-round program starts, and both on-campus and online options to fit your busy schedule. All disciplines are offered, including digital forensics, networking and telecommunications, and our full line of degrees, including a master's in cybersecurity. Find the future of you with a future in cybersecurity. Go to stratford.edu/cybersecurity today. That's stratford.edu/cybersecurity.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature John McCarthy. Now, John McCarthy is a computer scientist, best known as one of the founders of the discipline of artificial intelligence. In fact, he coined the term artificial intelligence, and he was also best known for developing the Lisp programming language. That's the Lisp processor, and that was a common programming language used for AI applications. McCarthy was born in Boston, Massachusetts, September 4th, 1927. He was quite intelligent. He graduated from Belmont High School 2 years early at age 16, and he was accepted into Caltech. His family moved out to California, and what he would do, they lived close to Caltech, and he would go over there and pick up math textbooks from the Caltech bookstore, and he would study mathematics. So he studied mathematics, college-level mathematics, using Caltech textbooks. So when he was accepted in Caltech, he was able to skip the first 2 years of math because he'd already learned it. Now, you'd have thought he would be just really a great student on the way to get his bachelor's degree, but he was suspended from Caltech because he refused to go to his phys ed classes. Now, I looked a few pictures at John McCarthy. I mean, he does not look like Mr. Athletic. So I guess he just did not like Caltech phys ed. But he was suspended because he did not attend the phys ed classes. And you know what he did? He joined the Army.
That's like a really big phys ed class.
That's right. You know, I'm telling you, going to boot camp was probably a lot worse than just taking the phys ed class there at Caltech.
Yeah, scoop ball versus boot camp or whatever, you know?
I just don't think the Caltech phys ed class is going to be that intense. That's just my feeling. Just my feeling.
It's called open and close your laptop, right?
That's right, yeah. So he was in the Army for 2 years, and then Caltech accepted him back. So they readmitted him. They forgave him for not doing phys ed. Well, maybe he didn't have to take phys ed after he had been into the Army. I don't know. But in 1948, he got a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics. And what influenced his interest in computers, though, John von Neumann, who was one of the computer luminaries, gave several lectures at Caltech, and John McCarthy went to those lectures and listened to John von Neumann, and this was right in the formative times of computer technology, computer theory, and he was inspired to get into this field by John von Neumann. Now, he was initially, he initially was doing his graduate work there at Caltech. But after hearing von Neumann's lectures, he decided to move to Princeton. And he received a PhD in math from Princeton in 1951. It's not bad. I mean, he got his bachelor's in 48, so he got a PhD 3 years later. It's pretty quick. Now, he had a short-term appointment, as a teacher, as a faculty member at Princeton. And then he got a short-term appointment as a professor at Stanford. And then he became an assistant professor at Dartmouth in 1955. And he wanted to work there at Dartmouth on some of their computer technology. He was only at Dartmouth for a year, and then he moved to MIT as a research fellow in the summer of 1956. By 62, that would be 6 years later, he became a full professor at Stanford. I mean, that's a big deal. Became a full professor at Stanford in 1962, and he stayed at Stanford until he retired in 2000. Now, he was a champion of mathematical logic for artificial intelligence. He believed that we could put together all the rules with some sort of mathematical beauty and consistency in order to create an artificially intelligent machine. He was one of the founding fathers of artificial intelligence, along with Alan Turing, Marvin Minsky, Alan Newell, and Herbert Simpson. He termed the coin artificial intelligence in 1955. He organized the famous Dartmouth Conference in the summer of 1956. This conference that he organized started artificial intelligence as a field, and all the luminaries in artificial intelligence were at that conference. McCarthy invented Lisp in the summer of 1956. Now, Lisp, that stands for Lisp Processor. It's a programming language which is used for artificial intelligence. It's used for many applications. It's based on lambda calculus. And lambda calculus is a formal language in mathematical logic for expressing computation. So lambda calculus, it can be used to simulate any Turing machine. So you can simulate any kind of computer with lambda calculus. And since he was a mathematician, he wanted to build a programming language that had internal mathematical beauty. So he based it on lambda calculus. Now, as one of the earliest programming language, Lisp pioneered many ideas in computer science, including a tree data structure, automatic storage management, dynamic typing of variables, conditionals, like do this if this is happening, higher order functions, recursion, self-hosting compiler, and then read, eval, print loops. So a lot of things that we've just taken for granted now were actually developed at that time when he developed Lisp. Now, Lisp is the second oldest high-level programming language. The oldest one is Fortran. Fortran is older by 1 year. That's the language that I learned first, mm-hmm. Fortran. I know and love Fortran. Now, in 1958, McCarthy served on the ACM Ad Hoc Committee on Languages. He became part of the committee that designed ALGOL 60. That's not Al Gore. That's ALGOL. That stands for Algorithmic Language 1960.
Hey, are we doing a comedy show here?
Well, I'm doing my best, Jim, but you know, it's hard to do too much comedy when you're talking about programming languages and lambda calculus.
Right. And Lisp.
And Lisp, that's right. He helped motivate the MIT Project Mac. Now, Project Mac, that stands for Project on Mathematics and Computation. And Project Mac was trying to develop a time-sharing system, because the big thing back there was they were trying to figure out how you could take a big mainframe computer and have many people share it and use it remotely. So time-sharing was a big push then. And McCarthy was a major guy in developing time-sharing technology. In fact, he was instrumental in creating three of the earliest time-sharing systems: a compatible time-sharing system, the BBN time-sharing system, because he was a BBNer, as we said earlier in the show, and the Dartmouth time-sharing system. Now, there are people, I was reading about it, that said because of his efforts in time-sharing, it accelerated the whole development of the internet. So if you think about it now, cloud computing is just another form of time sharing. So many of the items that we know and love today, like application service provider, grid computing, cloud computing, those are basically variations of time sharing, and a lot of the foundational work that McCarthy did on time sharing played into that field and accelerated that field. In 1961, he was the first to suggest publicly the idea of utility computing in a speech given to celebrate MIT Centennial. That's a computer time sharing technology that where we might result in computing power on the grid that's sold like a business utility model. So he talked about that in 1961. So now if you look at the Amazon cloud services, they're basically selling cloud computing as a utility. So that has pretty much come to pass. In 1966, McCarthy and his team wrote a computer program used to play a series of chess games with counterparts in the Soviet Union. Unfortunately, the Soviets won two of those games, and the other two were a draw. So I guess in the big computer shootout match between the software. The Soviets won back then. But still, it was a big breakthrough writing. And they wrote that chess computer programming in Lisp.
Didn't know that.
McCarthy was a big activist on world affairs. He was active on the Usenet forums. Some of his ideas can be found on his sustainability webpage. He also saw the importance of mathematics and mathematics education. In fact, he had a license plate cover, and this is what it said. Do the arithmetic or be doomed to talk nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
That was his saying. Do the arithmetic or be doomed to talk nonsense. He thought everyone should learn mathematics because that was a logical way of thinking. By the way, he was raised as a communist.
Really?
Yeah. And he took a 2-day visit to Czechoslovakia in 1968 after the Soviet invasion. And he decided that communism wasn't very good. And guess what? He became a conservative Republican.
Funny.
McCarthy died in his home in Stanford on October 24th, 2011. So he was one of the major driving forces in the whole field of shared computing and artificial intelligence. So there, everything you want to know about John McCarthy, one of the founders of artificial intelligence.
Hope you're paying for attention because we're going to be playing for food coming up here when we play the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio. Heard on Federal News Network, 1500 AM, 103.5 FM HD2, 103.9 FM HD2, now on 107.7 FM HD2, and also in Loudoun County on 104.5 FM.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
In the next 3 years, there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs. How can you make that work for you? Stratford University offers everything you need to succeed, from certifications to bachelor's and even master's degrees in cybersecurity, to prepare you for a rewarding career in today's most lucrative and sought-after field, cybersecurity. Stratford has seasoned IT faculty, well-equipped labs, and real-life scenarios to help you achieve practical solutions to today's newest challenges. And Stratford makes a cybersecurity career reality with accelerated classes, year-round program starts, and both on-campus and online options to fit your busy schedule. All disciplines are offered, including digital forensics, networking, and telecommunications, and our full line of degrees, including a master's in cybersecurity. Find the future of you with a future in cybersecurity. Go to stratford.edu/cybersecurity today. That's stratford.edu/cybersecurity.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, it's the Stratford University Pop Quiz with Andrew Mitchell, Jim Ross, featuring Mr. Big Voice, with musical guest, the Stratford University Junkyard Band, and your host, Dr. Richard Schertz.
Oh, yes, thank you. You can sit down now.
They are.
Our virtual audience can sit down now.
They're on a riser that just looks like they're standing. They're actually sitting.
Oh, very good. Now, this is actually not a radio show. It's a classroom of the airways.
Yes.
And what we have to do, we have to assess whether the class has been listening. And we do that with a pop quiz. You get the right answer to the pop quiz. You get tickets to fine dining at one of our dining rooms when they finally open after the coronavirus shutdown. And you'll also get an A+ for today's show. Now, early in the show, I was talking about John McCarthy. He, of course, is one of the founding fathers of AI. He coined the term artificial intelligence, and he developed the Lisp programming language. Now, he was quite a prodigy in school, and he started Caltech early, but he was kicked out of Caltech for doing something. Why was John McCarthy kicked out of Caltech and forced him to join the Army for a couple of years?
Okay.
If you know the answer to today's question, now's your chance to show us just how bright you are. Pick up your phone, give us a call. Dialing from west of the Rockies, it's 877-936-9333. If you've run aground on your jet ski in Playa del Shirts, Virginia, it's 877-936-9333. If you've been suspended from school in Canada, call us on the wildcard line, 877-936-9333. Anyone else, anywhere else, may call us on the international line. Disinfected hourly and certified by the Surgeon General, 877-936-3333. Now, once again, here's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Thank you very much. Let's talk about the app of the week.
Okay.
It's called COVID-Wise. And guess what? Virginia is the first state to use the COVID-19 tracing app.
Really?
Now, the Exposure Notification API, that's an application programming interface, was developed jointly by Apple and Google. And it is then available for use for anyone that wants to develop an app which uses that technology. And Virginia became the first state to offer a COVID-19 tracking application using that API. And it's available now for download from the App Store on iOS, the Apple App Store, or the Google Play App Store for Android. And it's called COVID-Wise. Now, the COVID-Wise apps comes from Virginia Department of Health. Apple only allows public health agencies like Health Canada to access the Exposure Notification API, but anybody can build an app using that API. Now, by using the Exposure Notification API, the COVID app uses Bluetooth, which exchanges random identifiers with people around you. And then if anybody that you have come in contact with through that Bluetooth linkage is reported to have COVID-19, you're notified that you've been exposed, but it doesn't tell you who exposed you. So this is basically a Bluetooth exchange. It's done without giving up your privacy, but the Bluetooth signals are date stamped. And if two signals are within 15 minutes of each other and you're within like 10 feet, then it would be considered a contact. And you'd be notified if the person that you were in contact with was reported to have COVID-19. Now, three other states have publicly signed on to use the API: North Carolina, Alabama, and South Carolina. So hopefully this is going to become in more widespread usage, because it is a very quick way to tap down an infection if you know exactly who you've been in contact with.
All right. We have somebody who'd like to play the game.
Okay.
Let's go to line one. This is Rick calling us from Alexandria, Virginia. Rick, good morning. How are you, sir? Hello, Rick.
Very well, thank you.
Good. Okay, Doc, yes. Go ahead and ask the question if you would, please.
Okay, early in the show, I talked about John McCarthy, one of the founders of the discipline of artificial intelligence. Why was he kicked out of Caltech before getting his bachelor's degree?
He did not want to take any physical education classes.
That is correct. We have a winner. Rick, congratulations. Hang on. We're going to send you back over to Andrew. He'll take your information, and we'll send the prize right out to you. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, heard on Federal News Network, 1500 AM, 103.5 FM HD2, 103.9 FM HD2, 107.7 FM HD2, and now in Loudoun County on 104.5 FM. We'll be right back in just a minute.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
In the next 3 years, there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs. How can you make that work for you? Stratford University offers everything you need to succeed, from certifications to bachelor's and even master's degrees in cybersecurity, to prepare you for a rewarding career in today's most lucrative and sought-after field, cybersecurity. Stratford has seasoned IT faculty, well-equipped labs, and real-life scenarios to help you achieve practical solutions to today's newest challenges. And Stratford
Stratford makes a cybersecurity career a reality with accelerated classes, year-round program starts, and both on-campus and online options to fit your busy schedule. All disciplines are offered, including digital forensics, networking and telecommunications, and our full line of degrees, including a master's in cybersecurity. Find the future of you with a future in cybersecurity. Go to stratford.edu/cybersecurity today. That's stratford.edu/cybersecurity.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Observations from the bunker.
Would you fix the stupid door already?
I know, it's really a bad thing in here. So I started thinking about, you know, this artificial intelligence and people trying to program computers to be human-like. And I started thinking about the question, can computers ever be conscious? Can they be self-aware? And we have a special guest to opine on that.
Uh-huh.
Good afternoon, Mr. Raymer. Everything is going extremely well. Let me put it this way, Mr. Raymer. The 9000 series is the most reliable computer ever made. No 9000 computer has ever made a mistake or distorted information, so I am constantly occupied. I am putting myself to the fullest possible use, which is all I think that any conscious entity can ever hope to do.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how all these science fiction things really turned out not to be fiction?
It really does. That, of course, was HAL 9000 from mm-hmm. from Space Odyssey 2001. And, of course, that was the famous HAL who actually was conscious.
Yes, he was. A little bit too conscious.
So the question is, you know, they're spending billions of dollars trying to develop self-directed computers, machines that can duplicate the human brain. The whole thing about machine learning is you basically give it training data sets, and they're trying to create a computer that will learn like the human brain learns. Ray Kurzweil wrote the book The Singularity, and he projects that by 2045, computers will have more processing power than the human brain, and that we will have created a superintelligence that might make human beings obsolete. That's kind of a pessimistic view.
It is.
Affirmative, Dave.
So,
I read you.
You know, and I think Hal is, you know, is one of those firm believers that that could happen. Because look what Hal did. He took over the spaceship and he was locking out the, he was going to kill Dave because Dave was going to shut him down.
Right. Survival of the fittest.
So there are, this is almost like a religion. There are some people who say, yeah, computers will be conscious. They'll be like people. And there are other people who absolutely disagree with it. And it's become almost a spiritual argument as to what will happen and can it ever happen. But the problem is, do we not really know the true nature of consciousness? I mean, nobody can agree on its definition or what it is.
Hmm.
I mean, we all know that we're conscious. I mean, we're alive, and then if we die, we're not conscious.
But do we know that?
Yeah, but
because
there's no
have you been
theoretical.
Dead?
Yeah, if we die, we don't. I guess we don't know.
Maybe it's a different level of consciousness.
It could be, and so. There's no theoretical evidence that anything that's not alive is conscious. Now, computers may simulate the brain process, but they really are never going to duplicate the brain process. And so it has become something which is quite an interesting observation. I mean, I had this debate with some of my friends in India, Hindu and Buddhists. And they actually believe that even trees are linked to the universe and animals, and there's consciousness there. They think all living things have an energy which relates to consciousness. So it's an interesting philosophical debate, and I think it's going to rage on forever. But there are some very important lessons from this. If it would be true that we could design artificially intelligent systems that could have power over, say, our weapons and our utilities, we could create a computer system that could be turned against us. And so now there is a big push on the part of computer scientists to set up ethics boards that analyze the uses of technology and the power that we give artificially intelligent computers. And I think it's important to get ahead of the power curve here and try to get some philosophers involved here and just not a bunch of computer scientists writing code.
Uh-huh.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
he just takes over. I can't stop him.
That's the trouble with Hal. You know, he just thinks he knows it all. I know one thing. If I were going to, you know, depend on someone to keep my life support systems going, I don't think I'd depend on Hal.
It wouldn't be Hal.
Because
no.
He's just not reliable.
No,
so
he's very – there's no gray area with Hal.
I think this is a worthy thought, and particularly now that we're getting into this machine learning realm – where they're not even writing code. They're just exposing the computer to data sets, and they don't actually know what it's learning from those data sets or how it uses it. And so they're getting to a point where we don't understand how the computer is programming itself with that data. And once you cross that great divide, particularly if we have the singularity where we have these enormously powerful machines, we might have a situation where the technology is unreleased and we can't get it back into the bottle. Mm-hmm. So I think ethics is certainly worthwhile doing. Kind of some weighty thoughts there.
Yeah.
But
thanks for breakfast chat, Saturday morning edition there. It's very nice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, Microsoft is trying to buy TikTok. You know, Trump has got this war with China, which I think is warranted because China has been eating our lunch for years. And TikTok, of course, is this short-form video application that basically teenagers are on. You can doctor up a video very easily with filters and then post it. And then TikTok has an artificial intelligence engine that will select other videos that might be of interest to you. And because of that selection process, you start seeing some really interesting videos. And the program becomes very addictive for young kids. And it's got millions of users. But Trump thinks that the Chinese government is using TikTok to track citizens in the United States, and he wants it decoupled from the parent company in China, which is ByteDance. And so he said if they don't have a way to transfer the code to the U.S. and on the way to a U.S. ownership, by the middle of September, he's going to pull the plug on TikTok in the U.S. So Microsoft has been actively talking to TikTok. Apparently, they're the only company interested. They haven't negotiated a price yet, but people are speculating it'll be between $10 and $30 billion. And TikTok's going to transfer 15 million lines of code to the U.S., and that includes all their AI algorithms for selecting the videos, which apparently are very sophisticated. Now, it's apparently the only bidder. And Microsoft and ByteDance have said they're going to have these discussions completed before the end of this month, before the end of August, and that will beat the Trump deadline of September 15th. The other good news this week, I was watching NASA TV last week.
How much time did the astronauts have
returned home.
How much time did you spend watching that?
I was on it a few hours, you know, because there are no commercials, and right. I just enjoy the chit chat that's going on there. And I mean, it was interesting to hear the two astronauts, Bob Benekin and Doug Hurley, when they came back. They said it was like a rough ride. They felt like cowboys coming back. They said when that Dragon capsule, he said these were their words, when it entered the atmosphere, it was like an animal that had roared back to life, and it was like thumping and bumping and making all kinds of noises. And they said it was a rough ride when they were going through the atmosphere.
It's pretty small, I guess, when you compare it to the space shuttle, right?
Yeah, it's very small. It's extremely small. So it's a rougher ride than the space shuttle. And both of those guys had been on the space shuttle. So it's a rougher ride. So once it hit they start cutting into the atmosphere and they let the atmosphere slow it down. The heat shields heat up to 3,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And they, and they slowed the rate down to 350 miles an hour. Then two small chutes popped out. And they said when those two small chutes popped out and slowed it down further, they said it was like somebody hitting the back of their chair with a baseball bat.
Wow.
It was like, boom.
Wow.
And then a second set of chutes, larger chutes, opened up gradually, and they brought it down to a 15 mile per hour descent rate for the splashdown. Now, it splashed down out, near Florida. It was in the Gulf of Mexico, near Florida. So it was in the Gulf of Mexico. They had to be careful where they splashed down because there was a hurricane down
there. Yes, there was.
So they had to pick a splashdown point that was away from the hurricane.
How close did they come to hitting the spot they had picked?
I don't know. I think they're pretty good. SpaceX is pretty good on hitting their marks.
Well, they got that booster rocket right back on, you know, when it launched. That was amazing when it landed right back on the ship.
That's right. It did. And then they even recover the nose cone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually recover everything. So it's really pretty impressive. Now, as soon as they landed, helicopter came up and picked them up and brought them back to the ship. And then they, but while they were sitting there waiting for the helicopter to pick them up, they wanted to test their satellite phone system because that was just an emergency backup in the event that they land someplace and unexpected, if something goes wrong, they land in the wrong place, they want to talk to someone. So they just were making random satellite phone calls to anybody who would pick up. They were making prank calls on the satellite phone to just, you know, to people as they were sitting. They say, hey, we're now in the space shuttle.
Did they order a pizza?
That's right. that's basically a backup system, and that worked. So this whole SpaceX, they came down. They said it was a flawless mission.
That's great.
Everything worked perfectly. Okay, let's talk about the tip of the week. This is PDFs. Have you ever heard somebody send you a PDF and they want you to fill it out?
Yeah.
And there's no way to fill it out on with your computer, so you got to print it out and then you got to write in these little tiny spaces. Well, there's a much better way to do that. It turns out that Adobe has a free online tool, and what you do, you upload the PDF to the Adobe website. It's called Adobe Fill and Sign. And then you've got access to text, to various check marks, and where you have to fill in. So all the, it's then a PDF form that you can fill out online. And so you upload it to Adobe Fill and Sign, and then you fill out your document. They even have a way to do a digital signature. Then once you've completed the document online, you simply can email it. Right from that website, or you can send a link to it, and you're good to go. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. And go to the Stratford University website, www.stratford.edu. Check out all of our programs there, and tell them that you heard about those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio is sponsored by Stratford University. For more information on courses at Stratford University, call 1-800-444-0804. Thanks for listening to Tech Talk Radio Online.